two boys are born on the same autumn day in Tudor England. One arrives wrapped in silk while cannons fire in celebration. The other enters the world to silence, wrapped in rags nobody wanted to wash. Fast forward a decade, they meet at a palace gate, swap clothes on a whim, and discover they're identical twins separated not by blood, but by an accident of birth. Before either can reverse the switch, the palace doors slam shut, trapping a pauper on a throne and casting a prince into the gutter. Mark Twain's 1882 novel wasn't just entertainment. It became a mirror held up to every society that mistakes privilege for merit. Tom Canty grows up in Offal Court, a rotting maze of alleys near London Bridge, where survival means begging, stealing, or both. His father, John, staggers home drunk most nights, fists ready. His grandmother cackles and strikes without reason. Only his mother and twin sisters offer gentleness in a world built on cruelty. Then Father Andrew, an aging priest, teaches him to read. Suddenly, worlds open. Stories of kings and castles fill Tom's imagination. He begins organizing elaborate pretend courts in the alleys, playing prince while his friends bow and scrape. Meanwhile, Prince Edward Tudor lives behind golden bars in rooms Tom can barely imagine. Tutors drill him in Latin, French, and statecraft. Servants anticipate his every need. Yet Edward stares out windows at children splashing in puddles, racing through streets, living freely. His gilded rooms feel like a beautiful prison. The question it poses remains uncomfortably relevant. If we stripped away titles, clothes, and bank accounts, could anyone tell who deserves what? Edward brings Tom to his private chamber and dismisses his attendants. Tom describes his life of beatings and hunger while sampling exotic sweets. Edward shares his suffocating existence under rigid protocols. On impulse, Edward suggests they trade clothes. Before a mirror, both freeze. They're identical, down to a matching wart on the left hand. When Edward, now in rags, rushes outside to confront the guard who mistreated Tom, disaster strikes. His declaration, "I am the Prince of Wales," meets laughter and violence. The guard strikes him, the crowd mocks him. Within minutes, the true prince is expelled from his palace as a lunatic. Inside, Tom stands paralyzed in royal silks as courtiers sweep him to meet the king. The swap is complete and irreversible. Tom's terror peaks when brought before King Henry VIII. He insists he's just a pauper, but the king decides his son is temporarily mad and must be humored. Tom's Latin convinces Henry the boy's mind isn't lost, though his inability to speak French nearly makes the monarch faint. Tom's first royal dinner involves 384 servants in elaborate choreography, one fastening his napkin, another preventing him pouring wine, a third tasting for poison. When his nose itches, the court freezes in procedural paralysis until he scratches it himself. Gradually, Tom adapts. The whipping boy system becomes convenient. The ceremonies grow pleasurable. Yet something remarkable happens. Tom's compassion doesn't disappear under power's weight. When judging cases of people condemned for trivial offenses, he questions evidence and commutes sentences. He dismantles a witchcraft accusation with common sense that leaves nobles muttering, "This is no mad king, he hath his wits sound." Tom discovers that power wielded by someone who understands suffering becomes a force for justice, transforming the throne from arbitrary authority into an instrument of mercy. Edward stumbles through London's darkest streets, lost and bleeding. Boys at Christ's Church mock his royal claims, bow in false homage, then set dogs on him. As night falls, he vows that when he becomes king, poor children will receive not just food and shelter, but education, because learning softeneth the heart and breedeth gentleness. This marks his transformation, suffering, awakening, empathy. John Canty seizes Edward and drags him toward Offal Court, where vagabonds mockingly crown him Fufu the First, King of the Mooncalves, placing a tin basin on his head. The humiliated king stands with tears streaming. Edward witnesses Tudor justice's brutality, brandings, whippings, ear cuttings, enslavement of displaced farmers. Most horrifying is watching two Baptist women burned alive for their faith, one woman's daughter rushing in and catching fire herself. Unable to bear it, Edward turns away, forever scarred. These experiences give him knowledge no monarch before possessed, a visceral understanding of his kingdom's injustices that will shape his eventual reign. Miles Hendon rescues Edward from a mob. Tall, muscular, dressed in faded finery, embodying nobility without title. A second son banished by his brother's treachery and imprisoned 7 years, his story mirrors Edward's, both robbed of their rightful place. What makes Hendon extraordinary is his response to Edward's delusion. Rather than dismissing the boy's claims, he humors them, addressing him as "Your Majesty" while quietly protecting him. When Edward offers any reward, Hendon requests only the privilege to sit in the king's presence, a modest request revealing his understanding of the boy's need for dignity. Hendon's loyalty peaks when Edward faces a whipping. He takes the lashes himself, bearing them with soldierly fortitude while the king weeps. Later, Edward tells him, "Kings cannot ennoble thee, thou good, great soul, for one who is higher than kings hath done that for thee." Through Hendon, Twain presents true nobility, not conferred by birth, but demonstrated through compassion and self-sacrifice. In a society obsessed with rank, Hendon represents merit-based worth that transcends circumstance. After 2.5 hours of pageantry, as the Archbishop holds England's crown over Tom's head, a bareheaded boy in rags marches up the aisle. "I forbid you to set the crown of England upon that forfeited head. I am the king." Guards move to seize him, but Tom commands, "Loose him and forbear. He is the king." The Lord Protector dismisses this as Tom's malady returning. The resolution comes through a test only the true prince could pass. When questioned about the missing Great Seal, Edward displays intimate knowledge of palace geography, directing Lord St. John to a hidden jewel closet. Though the search initially fails, Tom's presence helps Edward recall he'd hidden the seal in Milanese armor. When St. John returns with it, skepticism transforms into jubilation. Long live the true king! Tom's choice to support Edward despite the power he could have kept demonstrates that character exists independent of circumstance. As King Edward VI, the boy seeks justice for those he encountered, reclaiming the branded farmer, freeing the imprisoned lawyer, providing homes for orphaned daughters, punishing cruel officials. He saves some from the gallows, but arrives too late for others. Throughout his brief reign, he delights in telling his story as a lesson for merciful governance. When courtiers argue against his leniency, his response becomes famous. "What dost thou know of suffering and oppression? I and my people know, but not thou." Miles Hendon is knighted, made Earl of Kent, and granted the perpetual right for his line to sit in the royal presence. Tom Canty becomes chief governor at Christ's Hospital, known forever as the King's Ward. Though Edward lives only a few more years, his reign is remarkably merciful for those harsh times. Tom lives to become a venerable old man, people whispering respectfully, "Doff thy hat, it is the King's Ward." Their exchange benefits both boys and the kingdom. Edward gains the compassion necessary to rule justly. Tom receives education and position that allow him to rise above his origins. Their parallel journeys prove that character transcends circumstance, that true nobility exists independent of birth or title. In our own world, where accidents of birth still determine so much, this tale poses an uncomfortable question. How might society change if those holding power could truly experience life from the perspective of the powerless?